welcome to the Living Out podcast, helping people, churches and society talk about faith and sexuality.
Hello and welcome to the Living Out podcast. If we haven't met before, my name is Ed and this is, believe it or not, the season opener for season three of the Living Out podcast. And it's great to have you with us today. During our third season, we are very rashly going to try and tackle what we've called the questions that no one wants to answer. Questions we're going to try and answer are, in our experience, the ones that bring most controversy, often divide Bible-believing Christians, can lead to people judging you online and elsewhere. Questions we're going to cover on this season include questions like, can a Christian say that they're gay? Is being same-sex attracted inherently sinful? Can Christians go to a gay wedding? And then today's, should gay conversion therapy be banned? That is today's question that no one wants to answer. Thankfully, I'm not answering it by myself. I've got some help, and I'm going to go around the Zoom room that we're recording this on and find out who's out there reluctantly seeking to answer this question with me. First of all, Anne, are you there?
I am there. Hello.
Hello. What did you? I'm going to ask you because it's just been Christmas in the UK. It's the beginning of 2022. What was your favourite Christmas present, Anne?
Ooh, I got a lot of good things. My housemate did me a stocking, which was really lovely. We had it hung up over the fireplace. I put a mince pie out for Santa and all that business. That was absolutely lovely. I also got a really funny Christmas present, which was the result of a challenge that I did with a friend to buy the most hideous thing we could possibly find in a charity shop. And she got me a decorative bejeweled stiletto ring holder.
Wow.
Which I can safely say is... hilarious, but also absolutely hideous, and is going straight back to the charity shop in January.
Do you think there's some charity shops that have these presents on loop?
Yeah.
They said if it comes in, they go, oh, here we are again. We've got it back. Thanks, Anne. Andy, what was your favourite Christmas present?
So I got tickets to the Open Golf Championship at St Andrews this summer, which I think in a previous series I talked about being a bowls event. This time it's golf, so I'm continuing my reputation for sports for old men is kind of the result of Christmas this year for me.
Brilliant. And Andrew?
It's a hard choice for me. I was very blessed with many good presents, but I've chosen one I think Ed will be particularly keen on. I've actually brought it with me. It's such a sad thing. This isn't a vidcast. We can't see it, but this is a Phantom of the Opera teddy bear, combines two of my favourite things in the world, Phantom of the Opera and teddy bears. And Ed's face is exactly what I expected at this moment, but he's called Eric because that's the Phantom's name. He now lives in my bed and, probably my favourite present.
That is one of the most hideous teddy bears I've ever seen. Coming from...
That looks like the result of my challenge, that. It's not from a charity shop, is it?
Coming out of the worst musical I've ever seen.
Oh!
It's like a nightmare scenario, that is. I have got here... And actually, I can hold up one of my favourite Christmas presents, which is a gin based on the Black Death. Which again, people can't see. It is a black coloured gin. It basically looks like a bottle of poison. I haven't quite had the courage to drink it yet because it looks as if it might finish you off. Although, if I ever got the chance to sort of feed it to the hideous teddy bear Andrew Bunce just showed us, I would, in the hope they might kill it off. Turning to the subject matter of this podcast. Should conversion therapy be banned? Gay conversion therapy be banned? Probably worth just setting out a bit of context for what we're talking about. The UK government, many other national and state authorities across the Western world are committed to ending what has become known as gay conversion therapy, often by legislative means. And the question we're seeking to answer today is should they? Should gay conversion therapy be banned? And I guess probably the first thing that it would be most helpful to do is actually define what we're talking about, seek to understand what people are talking about when they talk about gay conversion therapy, when they try and ban it. Andrew, I think you're going to sort of help us on this one. What is gay conversion therapy?
well, when most people talk about it, it really is the phrase, because different people use this word differently. But I think when most people talk about it, most people just think of this concept. They think of attempts to change someone's sexual orientation through some sort of intervention. So it's attempts to change the kind of pattern, the direction of someone's romantic and sexual desires from being same-sex attracted to being opposite-sex attracted. And those attempts are through a various range of interventions of things. It's the reason some people say this should be conversion practices rather than therapy, because that's much broader than just a therapeutic thing. So sometimes that's being very physical things, awful things like corrective rape, electroconvulsive therapy, aversion therapy. Sometimes it has been what could be dubbed therapeutic stuff, of kind of people exploring the impact of parental relationships or different things in their lives. Sometimes it's very spiritual things. Exercising gay demons is what some Christian traditions would seek to do to change someone's sexual orientation. And so traditionally speaking, generally speaking, that's what most people would think of as gay conversion therapy. But then some people unhelpfully try to broaden that definition actually to include not just the direction of someone's desires, but also the suppression of desires, so kind of self-control of desires, and even actually the changing of someone's behavior, how they choose to respond to their sexuality, which is an unhelpful, kind of unhelpfully broad term if we do that. So really, we're best off to keep it to attempts to change someone's sexual orientation, the pattern, the direction of desires through some form of intervention.
I mean, if people wanted to get a sense of what has happened, of what this is like, the impact on somebody, can anybody recommend things that they've read that's helped them to get a sense of what gay conversion therapy has looked like in practice in some people's lives?
So if you read Vicky Beeching's autobiography, she tells the story of a youth camp. She was attracted to women as a teenager, and that resulted at the youth camp in an attempt to perform some kind of exorcism, presumably to try and make her straight and get rid of a gay demon, which ended up being massively painful for her. That would be one example.
Yeah, and other examples that I've come across, I mean, just even on, you know, there've been a couple of films recently made about how this has worked out in the US. So Boy Erased is probably the most sort of famous popular film on the subject, The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Both of those worth a watch to see, well, to see the impact on people's lives, but also to, as it were, get a sense of what people are thinking we're talking about when we're talking about gay conversion therapy. So I've just mentioned a couple of films from the States talking about gay conversion therapy. I mean, is gay conversion therapy just a sort of an American evangelical problem, Andrew?
I think probably not, although I think it's been prominent there. So when people think of gay conversion therapy, they think of America, think of what's called reparative therapy, a certain expression of gay conversion therapy, which I guess would have been, I'm not sure, 90s, kind of end of the last century. It's been a prominent problem there, and in evangelical circles there, I think so. But I think it is seen internationally as well in different forms, actually. You know, I have heard stories from around the world, including in the UK, very sadly, even though predominantly American stories are those that are known.
Let's just chat a bit about some of the attitudes that might have, as it were, been behind gay conversion therapy that have perhaps driven it, some of the misunderstandings, some of the theological missteps that Christians might have taken that led so much investment in efforts to change Christian sexuality from gay to straight. What are some of the things that have powered that, driven that, Anne?
I think marriage is rightly recognised in the church as a good thing, but I think sometimes it's been idolised, so it's been seen as an ideal that everybody should be working towards. And marriage as defined in scripture is between a man and a woman, and therefore for same-sex attracted people, in order to be able to marry somebody of the other sex, requires a change of orientation. What hasn't been recognised is that actually singleness, celibate singleness for a same-sex attracted person is also an amazing gift from God, is something that should be encouraged and valued and supported, that marriage is not the best or the ideal for everybody. So often people have been pushed into seeking change because there's this expectation that people should be getting married and having children in order to be faithful as a Christian.
There's a theological issue there as well, in that there's an assumption that anything that is less than ideal, anything that anybody finds difficult, an expectation God will remove immediately. Whereas as you look through the Bible, as you look through church history, you see God often allows people to live with something they find painful and does good work in people's lives as a result. So one of the reasons gay conversion therapy has had some traction in church is a theological misstep that God will sort everything immediately rather than ultimately solving all things in the new creation.
I think another belief that has underpinned gay conversion therapy approaches is the idea that the experience of same-sex attraction is always caused by something specific, that there's kind of a root cause, and if we can deal with the roots, then the shoots of same-sex attraction get dealt with. It's like weeding, you take up the roots to get rid of the weed. And so often that's been things like people assume same-sex attraction is rooted in problems between the relationship between the person and their parents, and that some sort of exploration of the impact of parental relationships will change experience of sexuality. Sometimes, similarly, it's kind of believed to be some sort of traumatic event in the past is the root of same-sex attraction. And actually, if that is dealt with, then change will happen. But the problem with that is the assumption that same-sex attraction is always rooted in something like that, and it just isn't borne out by anecdotal stories of loads and thousands and millions of gay people, or actually any kind of research evidence. So it's based on what I think is a completely unfounded assumption about the roots of where same-sex attraction has come from.
And it's also, isn't it, being driven by this whole understanding that sometimes out there that godliness is heterosexuality, which is an odd one, isn't it? Because actually godliness is being like Jesus. That may or may not mean that somebody moves from being a homosexual to a heterosexual. And actually, Christians investing too much in the language of heterosexuality and homosexuality is slightly odd, because those aren't biblical concepts. They're concepts that landed in this world in, you know, 1870s in Germany. And the Bible doesn't really have much to say about heterosexuality and homosexuality. It has a lot to say about sex and keeping sex within the marriage of a man and woman, as Anne pointed out. Has a lot to say about making sure that our desires are becoming more and more focused on God in Christ and the good things he's given us. But don't demand of a godly Christian that they get married and have 2.4 children, and that they are exclusively attracted to people of the opposite sex as a mark of being a true Christian. Do any of us have any experience of gay conversion therapy, somebody attempting to make us change from being same-sex attracted gay to being straight heterosexual?
No, I don't. And actually, as I talk to other Christians who are same-sex attracted, not many do, particularly now. Sometimes I think the impression is given that there's a load of gay conversion therapy around in churches today trying to change people's basic sexual direction. I'm not sure there is. There may have been historically, there may have been tragic stories of exorcisms in the past. I don't think it's a big thing today, and I do think that's a point worth making.
Is that just though because, you know, Andy, you've been to more conservative churches? Perhaps, I mean, Andrew, more of a charismatic background, surely a lot of this sort of thing is happening in charismatic circles today.
I am, as you say, from a charismatic background, now in a charismatic church, always have been all my life. But interestingly, I likewise have never experienced any pressure or suggestion that I should seek change in my sexuality. And I don't think I can think of anyone I've come across in my church circles who has. So I often hear it said that charismatic churches are the real hotspots for this, and yet that has not been my experience, despite being very open about my sexuality.
So we don't deny the experience of some people that have experienced something like this, but personally, we haven't come across it. And same for you?
Yeah, again, I've fortunately never experienced anything sort of coercive or abusive or anything like that. I have occasionally had sort of well-meaning friends thinking that I would be better off if I became straight. But I think, you know, more and more people are understanding now that that isn't the goal. And actually being holy and living out a celibate single life is a really good thing. And I've experienced help and pastoral support and prayer to help me live in line with my beliefs like that.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, again, I've had a few people sometimes after, you know, after I've done an event, come up to me and sort of say, well, you must have had a bad relationship with your same-sex parent, you must have experienced some trauma, you must have been sexually abused as a child. Have you ever sort of investigated that? Which is, you know, suggesting that those misunderstandings that we sort of talked about a few moments ago are still out there. and people are, as it were, trying to look for a cause and, as it were, put our sexuality down to a bad relationship with a same-sex parent or a sexual abuse as a child. So those things are still out there, but they've never, as it were, then followed that up with a, we must send you to a boot camp in which these issues will be dealt with finally in the UK at the moment. Not denying that some people have had bad experiences, but it's probably worth people hearing that our experiences have been positive in the UK church of today. Those who've had bad experiences, though, do talk about the bad effects that it's had. Again, it'd just be worth sort of talking about that and just talking through some of the damage that has been done. So what's been the effect on real-life people of these attempts at gay conversion therapy?
For individuals, and there's various things. I mean, many people just go through various forms of conversion therapy, find it doesn't work, and there's just huge levels of disappointment, pain. They'd really pinned a lot of hopes in this. For some people, they've been trying to escape what they felt was a very shameful position, and the fact they then failed, they failed to escape that shameful position, just increases the shame. It's kind of, it's really sad they have to get lumped on people. And I think also that can lead some people to abandon biblical teaching. If actually the theory is being, I need to get married to be happy, the way to do it is me to change, oh, I haven't changed, oh, then I'm going to have to abandon biblical teaching and go after a gay relationship. I think very often for individuals, it's very destructive in that way upon them.
Yeah, I think the other issue that's just worth, the other bad effects, is it causes some people to look for problems where there aren't problems, and to dissect a relationship with their same-sex parent that actually has been good, fine, and healthy, and blame their parents, blame their same-sex parent in a way that actually damages a relationship that was actually quite good before they went into this sort of therapy. And that's really, really sad. Or to sort of look for a trauma that never happened. I mean, I was once told that I might not remember being sexually abused, but I clearly had been sexually abused as a child. And what are you meant to do with being told that you have repressed something so much that you can't remember it? And somebody might, I mean, it was an incredibly unhelpful thing to say to me that I must have been sexually abused when I haven't been. And to start thinking, well, who or when did that happen? And those sort of effects on people. I mean, thankfully, I was able to talk to good, wise people who told me not to worry, obsess about that sort of thing. And actually, that was my instinctive response anyway. But you can see how when people are desperate to change their sexuality, it's very easy to give them somebody to blame, your parent, or, you know, there's some deep wound that you don't even know about, and how damaging, destructive that could be of somebody's relationships with their parents and with their past.
I mentioned the fact that gay conversion therapy not working for people caused people to abandon biblical teaching, but also struck me actually more seriously, it caused people to abandon Jesus and just feel he doesn't care about them, actually. Because if people have been promised, oh, you don't have to be like this, Jesus wants to change you, Jesus will change you, it doesn't happen, what questions that cause them to ask about Jesus? So I think it just doesn't, it has masked Jesus' heart from people because people have made false promises and it hasn't happened. Actually, one of the most heartbreaking stories really are other people who, on the basis of gay conversion therapy and find it doesn't work for them, turn away from Jesus completely, believing he just isn't there or doesn't love them. And that's, for me, one of the most heartbreaking and serious negative effects of it.
So I hope that by now you're getting the impression that we at Living Out do not support what is popularly known as gay conversion therapy. We've given you some of the reasons why, some of the thinking behind that. On the website, I've written an article which goes into a little bit more detail and in some ways sets out a bit of a position paper from Living Out as to why we don't support gay conversion therapy. After the break, we'll come back and sort of seek to answer some of the questions that you might have off the back of what we've talked about so far.
Hello, Anne here with an exciting announcement. The Living Out team are going on tour. We've got 3 training days to explore sexuality in our culture, the biblical picture, and how we can support same-sex attracted Christians at church. So we're going to be in Cheltenham on Saturday the 29th of January, Leicester on Saturday the 5th of March, and Lancaster on Saturday the 19th of March. You can find out more details and book on our website, livingout.org. Also, just to let you know that our friends at True Freedom Trust are running a women's conference in London on the 26th of February, where Jeanette Howard will be speaking on the theme of My Beloved, My Friend. For more information and to book that event, go to truefreedomtrust.co.uk.
So at Living Out, we don't support efforts to change someone's sexuality from gay to straight through any type of therapy. Does this mean that we don't think anyone's sexuality can ever change? Andy?
God can do anything, so it's possible for God to change people's sexuality. It's probably also worth saying that there is some evidence of a little bit of fluidity around sexuality, perhaps particularly amongst women, perhaps particularly at a younger age. So at one level, it is possible for people's sexuality to change. But it seems to me the normal way in which God works is he doesn't change our sexuality, but strengthens us by the power of the Holy Spirit to live faithfully with our sexuality and to learn lessons about depending on him and learn lessons about empathizing with people in the midst of that and to learn lessons about deep friendships. So God can change our sexuality. Sometimes that can be altered for people, but normally it seems to me the way God works is to leave us with our sexuality and help us to flourish in that situation.
I think it's interesting to note when you hear the stories of people who say they've experienced change, which is important to listen to, in the same way we must hear stories of people who say, actually, these things harmed me, we should listen to stories that say, actually, I've been helped, I've experienced change in my sexuality. Often when you dig deeper, it can be presented as radical change taking place. Often when you dig deeper, very small amounts of change has taken place. So someone is still predominantly same-sex attracted, but actually maybe has experienced a bit of opposite sex attraction, maybe finds somewhere they feel they can marry. Or sometimes the change isn't actually in the direction of desires, it's in how someone self-identifies. You know, I previously thought of myself as a gay man, now actually I think of myself as someone who just experiences these type of desires. Or behaviour. Sometimes the change actually just is behaviour. I was struggling not to sleep with men, someone would say, no, I'm not. And so I think we should listen to stories where people say change has taken place, but we should also be really careful to ask what change has taken place, what's it actually mean? Because I worry sometimes those stories can be a little bit misleading if we don't look at the detail a bit more.
And a great example of that would be Sean's story on the website, wouldn't it? Where you know he talks about exactly the sort of a small amount of change that's happened in his sexuality in those sort of terms. Does this mean that we don't think that same-sex attracted gay people should ever get any sort of professional counselling or pastoral support about their sexuality, Anne?
I think we're really clear that we don't agree with coercive or abusive practices or anything like that to change people's sexuality. But I think it's important to separate that out from pastoral support that helps people to live in line with their faith convictions. I mean, sexuality is a big deal for everybody, isn't it? Whether you're gay or straight. And I think the freedom to be able to explore it, especially in terms of our beliefs and the way that we want to live our life, is really important. So when I was younger, I really benefited from some counselling where, amongst many other things, I talked about my sexuality and worked through that with the counsellor. And she really helped me to see how I could bring my sexuality under the Lordship of Christ as a single same-sex attracted person. You know, that means I've made choices that I don't want to be sleeping with somebody unless I'm married to them. And if I do get married, that would be to a man. And so actually counselling was really helpful to enable me to live in the light of my strongly held convictions. I've also received really helpful prayer and support from friends in a kind of informal way as part of the life of the church. And that's really helped me to live out my beliefs and helped me to flourish actually as a single person. So I don't want people to be banned from getting the help that's been so beneficial to me.
Thank you. So some people listening might be thinking, have they actually answered the question yet? We said that we at Living Out don't support gay conversion therapy ourselves. But does that mean we think that gay conversion therapy should be banned, made illegal? In some ways, that's the difficult question we've been posed. Have we been clear enough on that? Let's see if we can get some clarity from Andrew.
Let's see. I think as with so many of the questions we're discussing in this conversation, nuance is so important. So to break it down a bit, should some of the physical acts we've talked about be banned? Absolutely. Those very physically abusive acts like corrective rape, forced starvation, different things, absolutely should be illegal. And in most places in the UK definitely already are illegal, and the UK government have acknowledged that and have no intention of introducing new law for that because that's already illegal. And we should, as Christians, be the first to say any physically abusive practice should be illegal as it already is. Beyond that, things get a bit more complicated. We come away from physical practices. Coercive and abusive practices, absolutely, again, should be banned, actually. No one should be coerced. No one should be experiencing things which are abusive. It is also very hard to legislate for that very carefully. You need workable parameters. You need a law that really does protect people, but doesn't also introduce a whole load of problems and stop a load of good stuff happening. And actually, if in a law, if your parameters are too low for coercion and abuse or too high for consent, then it's really easy for the wrong stuff to get caught in the net, as it were. So coercive and abusive practices should absolutely be stopped, and law can do that, should be involved in that, but it has to be done really carefully to make sure that other things aren't caught up. So the issue of definition is really important, and those parameters of what does coercion and abuse look like, what does consent look like, are really important. Because the real risk is stuff which many of us have found to be really helpful and that isn't harmful, such as some of the things Anne just talked about, pastoral support, prayer, receiving biblical teaching, all those kind of things, that could unfairly, unhelpfully get caught up in that as well. And my belief is there absolutely should be legislation to stop coercive and abusive practices if those are taking place. But actually, really, the most important thing is education. And what I really believe is any laws that get passed that mustn't stop churches having discussions, wrestling with biblical teaching, us being able to do the kind of work we do, because really a law is never going to change hearts anyway. Law can never truly change things, but actually learning, education, the Spirit of God and His work in our hearts can. And so what's most important is that we continue to do exactly the work Living Out of Trinity Courage, talking what does the Bible teach? How do we thrive and flourish as sexual beings? That, I think, is actually the best way of protecting people.
Yeah, and my fear is that if a very restrictive ban comes in, then it's actually going to stop gay people from being able to talk about their sexuality. It's going to discriminate against LGBT people in church, and it's going to stop them receiving the sort of help that is freely available to straight people. If there's this threat of prosecution hanging over religious leaders, youth leaders, ministers, that kind of thing, it will deter them from actually supporting LGBT people in the way that they would easily and happily support straight people. So it could have a really detrimental effect in terms of, you know, sending people back into the closet, making gay people unwilling to talk about the things that they're facing, and actually making the people around them in churches particularly unwilling and unable to support them.
We probably feel that quite keenly as the four of us, that the last thing we would want is the 16, 17 year old version of us to say, I can't talk to my pastor because they might get in trouble. That's just a desperately awful place to be. And so that's why we're particularly fearful of poorly drafted legislation on the issue of gay conversion therapy.
Yeah, and so any of us living in jurisdictions where gay conversion therapy is being talked about as being banned are wanting to ban what is harmful and damaging to people like us, but also protect and make sure that people like us do still have access to good pastoral counselling and support from within the worldview that Christianity gives us in the Lord Jesus Christ. And we just want to make sure that, yeah, harmful things go away, healthy, helpful things are protected. And certainly in the UK context, that's what we're really working to do at the moment. There's a government consultation on legislation to ban gay conversion therapy. We're involved, encourage other people in the UK who are listening to this to get involved in making sure bad stuff is banned, but good stuff is preserved. Hey, thanks everybody so much for taking part in this episode, part of our season, Questions No One Wants to Answer. Thank you for being so up for answering a question that no one wants to answer. The good news is there are going to be plenty more of these questions. Let's see, you know, at the moment we've got four members of the Living Out team. Potentially by the end of this series, it could just be one person here, because we recognise that nobody wants to answer the particular questions we're getting onto. But thank you for taking part in this one. You might think we've just scratched the surface. In some ways, we have. There are a lot more resources on the website talking about these experiences and these issues, a number of blog posts and articles that the show notes will point you to. We'll be back with another question that nobody wants to answer in a couple of weeks' time. do subscribe to this podcast to make sure you don't miss an episode. And if you've enjoyed this discussion, if it's really helped you understand the whole debate around gay conversion therapy, pass this podcast on to a friend, to your church leader, so that others get to benefit, hopefully, from it too. Thanks to the team for joining me. Thanks to you for listening.